The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody, welcome. It is hour number three on this Monday, the 15th day of August 2022. Hope you all are well. Handing things over to Mike Gallagher next hour. So what will we make of this 9 o'clock hour? There is a fresh busloads of migrants arriving in New York City this very morning from Texas. Ken Paxton was on the TV box over the weekend talking about it. They have a Fox News correspondent, a gentleman named Nate Foy, up there at Port Authority bus terminal. And there's some concerns now about the health of the migrants that are arriving in New York City. We'll check into that here in just a second. I think with each passing week, I think Governor Abbott, who, of course, is focused like a laser beam on reelection, he is coming to realize that the busloads of migrants are an absolute net plus for him. They make national news. They give him a national profile. They bolster the portion of his voter base that believes that it is a wonderful thing to take America's border problem and put it right in the lap of liberal mayors like Eric Adams in New York City and Muriel Bowser in D.C. Some of the folks who have said that this is sort of empty political theater, that it actually takes migrants and embeds them further into the country, which is kind of what they want, that's not a terrible point. But it's such a sliver of the number of people who are, you know, pouring across the border. Is it political theater? Of course it is. But I don't think it's empty. I think it's been pretty darn useful. Anything that creates an opportunity to and it's almost as if the authorities in New York City and in Washington are trying to do Abbott campaign ads, because the more they whine and complain about it, the more they make the point that border incursions are bad for America, whether it's South Texas or D.C. or New York City. And I think Abbott senses this as a net positive. And so get ready for more busloads. I'll give you some of the coverage just literally minutes ago of the latest busload and some of the coverage of that. But let's take care of some folks who are waiting on hold during the newscast. 866-660-5759. We are in Garland. Mark. Hey, Mark Davis, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing great. I just I have a friend who sends me notices from a source called Vox. I don't know anything about them other than they're, you know, heavily slanted Democrat propaganda. But they're reporting that of the 11 sets, there is a set collected of secret, top secret information that Trump had a set of old retired nuclear codes, and that the leaker from the inner circle at Mar-a-Lago, either a campaign person, we don't know who that is, called the FBI, called DOJ, and said, the discussion has been that he would use those as part of campaign funding and
give
them out for a campaign donation.
What would in what way an expired nuclear code is valueless?
Well, no, it does, because it does reveal methods. It reveals it's just like how many digits you use in your private password code.
You know,
reveals methods.
Did you mention what is
are they
was
considered
it
secret after they retired?
I don't know.
Probably I don't know if this is true or not, Mark.
But there's heavy reason to doubt it. You know, I mean, this the last place that I'm going to go to for some unconfirmed source about what's in any of the Mar-a-Lago material is a news source that hates Trump's guts in the first place. There may be some pretty unpleasant stuff that comes out of this for him, some documents he just shouldn't have had. But the bar for this raid is that there had to be an urgency and a stonewalling lack of cooperation that led to the Attorney General of the United States needing to send guns-drawn law enforcement into the residence of a Biden political rival. And it'll be interesting watching them try to make that case. It'll be very interesting watching them try to make that case. 866-660-5759. Sam, Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Monday. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hey, good.
Well, I've got a thought about Chris Cuomo and his upcoming show on News Nation, but first I have a musical birthday.
Oh, who would that be?
I heard you play a tiny snippet of a song on Friday, and I couldn't believe it. I said, Mark's playing a Switchfoot song.
Switchfoot! That's right. It was unprovoked. You bet.
Yes, sir. Well, from Switchfoot, it's Tim Foreman's birthday today.
And excellent.
I wanted to ask you a favor. You always say you like to dig deeper into the catalogs of the artists we know.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking you to do anything today, but please dig down into Switchfoot stuff when you get a chance and get back to me. The stuff that makes it to the radio is some of their weakest material, in my opinion. And I have a feeling you'd find some value in.
Give me a track you don't think the world knows enough about. What's the first thing that occurs to you?
Native Tongue, I think it'd be a good one that seems different from their radio stuff.
Very, very cool. Consider it done, and consider it done in short order. All right. So what about Brother Cuomo?
Well, about Cuomo, I'll start with this. I'm not a fan. He's obviously a liberal, and I think he's further left than most center left reasonable liberals. However, like Mike G says, he treated you with respect.
Sure did.
And that earned some points.
Yeah.
I also think he showed some hints of hesitation every once in a while. Like if Don Lemon was really on a tear about something, sometimes you could hear Cuomo kind of hemming and hawing at the more extreme comments. So, but what I really want to point out here is that there are some largely forgotten comments he made on his radio show during the COVID quarantine back in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, most of the media, including Cuomo himself after the fact, they chalked it up to a COVID brain fog or the stress of being under quarantine. But I want to push back and disagree on that, because I think spending some time alone contemplating his path in life, he may have actually brought about a moment of clarity and regret about what he was doing. And anyway, considering that frame that I've placed around it, I want you to hear some exact quotes of what he said. I don't want to spend my time doing things that I don't think are valuable enough. I don't like what I do professionally, I've decided. I don't value indulging irrationality and hyper-partisanship or trafficking in things that I think are ridiculous. I don't think it's worth my time. And he said that being a celebrity left him in a powerless position, and he wished he could just tell people off. And the kicker quote at the end was that he said, that matters more, I guess, telling someone off. That matters more to me than making millions of dollars a year. So even though he walked it back later, probably just to keep his job at CNN.
Exactly.
Temporarily. What if maybe he actually wanted to be a real journalist and not be forced to bow to these corporate messages and to Hollywood and the media? So this new show might be, being on a more obscure network, it may actually give him a chance to be an honest journalist.
Yeah, and when he did the full interview with Dan Abrams on News Nation that was used to announce his coming show on News Nation in the fall, there were all kinds of quotes to that effect, and they didn't indicate that he was like a conservative in the making or sought to distance from every liberal thing he ever believed. He is still a Cuomo. He is still Mario's son and Andrew's brother. But I think that the branding that he now seeks is something that is becoming really fashionable. Look at all the love being thrown at Bill Maher. Tulsi Gabbard hosted Tucker Carlson on Friday. And what the box of ingredients here is folks who are decidedly liberal, willing to do something that liberals of conscience used to do, and that is show some objectivity, show some ideological inclusiveness, some willingness to hear the other side. And if that's part of the Chris Cuomo brand moving forward, then good for him. All right, Sam, ears peeled in about 9 minutes there, buddy, ears peeled. 866-660-5759. We are in Gainesville. Mike, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Happy Monday.
I appreciate it. So you know, I was, as a Gainesville resident, I was a little bit curious as to how this rally was going to go up on Friday night.
Oh, the Beto rally. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I wandered into town about a half an hour before the rally started just to kind of take a gander at who was there supporting him and what, yes, you know, if some of these things we're hearing were true. But about a half an hour before, I realized I wasn't going to get in that room and watch him. A, they were collecting money, and B, they wanted to just give name and number, and I just wasn't going to do that. But there was a protesting group of maybe 15, 20 people, and they started doing the bullhorn thing across the street. And to me, that kind of turned me off. I said, guys, I don't know whose heart you're going to change inside that church across the street, but standing out here the bullhorn isn't the way to do it. So I decided to kind of peel back and go back home. And where the story goes, I told my wife, I said, I was really disappointed because I wanted to get inside and ask some serious questions and not get into a screaming match. I said, but someday I'll get that opportunity. Well, lo and behold, Saturday morning, I'm tooling down the street in Gainesville, and there's a big, tall gentleman jogging right down the middle of Gainesville side streets, and it was Beto. So I hit the brakes on my truck and jumped out, and I yelled to him. I said, hey, Beto, you know, can we talk for a minute? And to his credit, he stopped and walked back, and I just approached him and said, look, I'm not a supporter and never will be, but I did want to ask some questions. I said, I don't think it's right that people are, you know, personally attacking you that don't know you, and I want to stay above the fray. And but I had a question for you. I said, I don't understand how you can parade around North Texas day after day, standing in churches at your pulpit, giving your political speeches when you support the killing of unborn children.
Hello.
And how you do that, and how you do that from the pulpit of a church. I just don't understand that.
Right.
And of course, and his three or four comebacks were just talking points. Just the first thing he brought up was his Bible that he studied, and I'm not going to get theological about it, but there's different belief systems and there's different interpretations. And I said, I'm not asking you for your theological statement. I just want to know how you can do that. How do you sleep at night? And he said, well, I don't know. How do you sleep at night forcing 10-year-olds to have abortions
that
don't want to carry their rape?
Okay.
And I said, well, if you want to go down the path of that 0.02% example, we can talk about it, because I'm pretty sure she was raped by an illegal alien that is supported by your open border policy. And honestly, he just shut down and started stammering at that point. This is such a talking piece. He's such a one-line political. There's no substance to him. So we stood in the middle of the street in Gainesville and had an abortion debate, and all he could do was bring up those kind of really, you know, fringe examples of abortion, and he couldn't answer the question. So for 15 minutes, I had his handlers convinced I was right, but he wouldn't move. But
well, I don't know about the handlers.
There were a couple of, I don't even call them handlers. They may have been some advanced men, but it was funny. I just thought it was funny.
Thank you for sharing. Couple of takeaways. One, Beto needs to beef up security. number two, as I think you said, good for him for having the willingness to stand there and at least, you know, have a chat, no matter how empty the contents might have ultimately gone. But number three, and the most important thing, is that when, you know, it comes out of rally mode, and the pro-aborts are confronted with what their views actually are and actually mean, it does make it difficult for them to carve out to come out of the corner into which they've painted themselves. And listen, if somebody wants to be radically pro-choice, if somebody wants to be a cheerleader for abortion, okay, but doing this from a church is going to create a disconnect. And anybody even remotely attempting to say that there is some biblical precept for their view is going to crash and burn immediately, as you saw. And then the nya 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 about, you know, the 10-year-old is something that if somebody has the intellectual heavy lift to do it, as you did, it's a 0.02% example and it doesn't belong in the overall, painting of the entire issue. But if it does come down to something like that, I guess the most important thing is if you got a pregnant 10-year-old, that probably is a hazard to the girl's life. And that probably would be a justification. And they're just making stuff up out of that Ohio case. And the second thing is that innocent life, unborn life is sacred. It either is or it isn't. And to us, it is. Mike, thank you for the story out of Gainesville. Appreciate that. Thank you very, very much. All righty, 9:21. More of you next. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. To find somebody to love you the way Sam loves Switchfoot. That is a commitment. And this is a good record, a title track from Native Tongue from the boys of Switchfoot 2019. All right. That's kind of an Imagine Dragons vibe, Drew. I hope that's not an insult. And... Alrighty, 866-660-5759. We are in Rockwall. Judy, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
Great, thank you.
I appreciate you taking my call. I've got kind of a weird question. I don't trust progressives.
Yes.
And now they're sending another group over to Taiwan. Do you think they're trying to provoke something that would cause a delay of the midterm?
There'll be no delay of the midterm. However, your suspicion is not ill placed. First, Nancy Pelosi, and what Judy's referring to is there is a new 5-member delegation led by Massachusetts Democrat Senator Ed Markey arriving in Taipei on an unannounced 2-day visit. What is with these Democrats suddenly showing solidarity with Taiwan, something that seems to be kind of a conservative thing, something that a Republican talking point might pursue? I mean, we are the ones who talk about the degree to which the Biden administration itself is kowtowing way too much to communist China. There is a Republican member of Congress in there. Oh, my gosh. I forget who she is. She's fairly obscure, so pardon me. But other and 3 more thoroughly obscure Democrats as well. So what could be behind this? I think maybe the first most plausible thing, first of all, anything that's inherently good to do, I want to give people benefit of the doubt that maybe they're just trying to do something that's inherently good to do. Is it an attempt? Are these Democrats who are trying to sabotage Biden just to highlight Biden's lack of spine in pursuing a tough stance about communist China, because what they deeply, deeply want is a different nominee in 2024. That'd be my thought. I mean, that's the first thing that occurs to me here. Hang on a second. Who is the Republican who is there? Let me hop into the news. I'll come back and I'll tell you who the folks are on that latest congressional delegation to Taipei. What are these folks up to? I don't know what Gordon Griffin is up to. Newscast time. Mark Davis, 9:31.
Encircling the waters around Taiwan. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was in Taiwan for less than 24 hours, but Beijing's military drills and response are lasting for days.
The internet is my friend. Oh, there we go. There's what it was. That was my Chinese story that had risen up out of the... Sometimes the laptop just plays stories it wants you to hear. And I'll tell you what it was. I was looking for who the Republican was, and he said, man, I've never heard of her before, and I thought I'd heard of everybody. Representative Amua Amata Coleman Radowagan. That's just fun to say. The reason I hadn't really heard of her, and she wasn't a real friend of mine, she is America's Congress's non-voting delegate from American Samoa. So that's fine. you know, that's great. She's a person. That's a title. That's a big deal. That's lovely. So other than that, Democrat members of Congress, John Garamendi, Alan Lowenthal, Don Beyer, and the person you have heard of is Massachusetts Democrat Senator Ed Markey. And the late Judy had a fascinating question. What are these people up to? Whenever Democrats are doing something that seems to be counterintuitive, you know, it's like, whoa, for example, what are Democrats doing making, you know, delegations to Taiwan, which is an absolute thumb in the eye of the communist Chinese regime? What might that be about? It's not a bad question. It is not a bad question. 866-660-5759. Questions, answers abound. All kinds of things on the phone lines. Let me hop back there, and then we'll go up to some of the coverage in New York this morning of a fresh busload of migrants from Texas. But right now we're in Dallas. Roger, Mark Davis, happy Monday. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Davis. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
You know, after the Dobbs decision came down, I just kind of rumbling through Twitter, and I noticed don't have a big argument when it comes to, like, viability. So what do you think the conservative argument should be for viability?
There was a kind of a cellular burp about 20 seconds ago, so take it from I was looking through Twitter right after the Dobbs decision came down, and...
Yeah, one thing I noticed is that conservatives, often we don't argue about, like, viability when it comes to... a fetus. What do you think conservatives should be discussing on that matter?
Well, okay. Let me offer my first thought, then share yours, and others may join in. And so, because honestly, is that viability doesn't matter. I'm not the person drawing some magical line at 20. Where are we now? Probably 20. What's the earliest birth that we've had where the baby survived? Like, are we at 21 weeks now? Maybe. Scarcely halfway through the pregnancy, the reason viability comes up a lot is that's when even some pro-choicers begin to maybe kind of say that the baby deserves not to die, as if at 19 weeks it does, at 15 weeks it does, at 13 weeks it does. It's expendable. It's just a clump of cells. Viability is significant to me. I'd say it's an amazing point, past because it's an incredible technological march that keeps getting earlier and earlier. One wonders how early it will go. Nothing pleases me more than the technology of being able to let a child be born really prematurely, if that happens, and have the result be a living, thriving baby. That's incredible. So let me wrap up and hand it back to you and see if this is sort of where you were thinking about, that viability is the point at which a baby can be delivered and have some expectation of survival. It has nothing to do with the point during the pregnancy at which I consider the newly created life to be sacred, because to me, that is the moment at which the pregnancy begins.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I just think that, like liberals, they like to discuss at what point is it just, you know, when is a life just a bunch of clump of cells rather than like an actual life? So...
That's kind of the point is that if you, again, viability is a significant developmental point, no doubt about it, but it has nothing to do with the sacredness of the newly created life. That the best thing pro-lifers can do is say that the viability statistics, the viability bar, the point at which a baby can be delivered and have an expectation of surviving, has nothing to do with the driving force of the pro-life view. The one driving force of the pro-life view, and that is that newly created life is sacred the moment the pregnancy begins. It at no point is it dismissible. At no point is it expendable. Whether it's pre-viability, post-viability, because that's the consistency of the pro-life view. Roger, thank you. Appreciate it very much. That's the guiding beacon of it. And again, that is what makes people's heads blow apart, who can't imagine how, you know, somebody who's raped or been a victim of incest, those are terrible things. Those are horrible things. Do the horrors of those crimes, do those evils, do those offenses make the newly created life suddenly expendable? No. It does not. And that, you know, there's some heavy lifting there in explaining that to people. But I think folks are starting to get it. Because I got to tell you, if you go back just 10 years, okay, it's 2012 instead of 2022. And somebody asked me, will Roe v. Wade be overturned, you know, in your lifetime? I always said I hope so, but I have no idea. No idea how long it'll take to erase that constitutional scourge, and then darned if it didn't happen. But here's the other thing that has happened right alongside, and this is another huge victory of the pro-life movement in terms of its ability to change hearts and change minds. And that is, and look at all these states that are flat out outlawing abortion, except for not health of the mother, not rape, not incest, the life of the mother. If the pregnancy is going to kill the mother, okay, we get that. You know, mom is not expendable either. But people are, and it's not easy. And it's not like they like it. It's not like they're accepting it. But it is happening. Actual states with actual legislatures, like, you know, ours in Texas, are starting to make this very, very point. That life is sacred from the moment the pregnancy begins. This is, it's hard, it's easy to say. Hard to grasp for many, but it's okay. We have time. All right. This is Nate Foy. I think a brand new Fox hire. They said, hey, Nate, why don't you go up to New York and cover the latest Abbott buses, the buses of migrants coming from Texas to New York City. And the story this morning involves some health concerns for some of those arriving migrants.
Yeah, another bus just about 2 hours ago, right after 7 a.m., arrived here with 52 migrants on it. You mentioned the concerns about the health of these migrants, possibly COVID. We know that one migrant was taken to the hospital. We're not sure exactly what for. But New York City officials are also concerned that migrants are being held on these buses against their will, which is something Texas also denies. Take a look at this group that arrived this morning. Again, a group of 52. Commissioner Manuel Castro of the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs, again there welcoming migrants into New York City. And he's blasting Texas Governor Greg Abbott. He says Abbott is not a man of good character, and he believes some migrants are being forced to stay on these buses. Listen to this.
Mm-hmm. On these buses, individuals have wanted to leave the buses, and unfortunately, they were met with resistance.
This is Manuel Castro, New York City's Office of Immigration Affairs. Really, really, they wanted off the buses, did they? They're in the custody of the United States, in the custody of the state of Texas. I mean, I'm really sorry we don't sit you down with a travel agent to plan your itinerary to the destination of your choice. If you want to have just the freedom to walk around wherever you wish, maybe you should have stayed on that side of the border.
If this is a bus, if this is an effort that's supposed to be voluntary, if this is supposed to be a voluntary effort, then why is it that people are not being allowed to offboard the bus and go to their actual destination?
Like they get to pick. They get to pick. I've just entered the country illegally. I'd like to go to Wisconsin. I'd like to go to Topeka, Kansas. I'd like to go to Vegas or Disney World. What exact kind of options are we offering these folks?
Now, Dana, Governor Abbott's office strongly denies that accusation, telling Fox News, quote, these migrants willingly chose to go to New York City, having signed a voluntary consent waiver available in multiple languages. Now, also according to the governor's office, Texas has now sent over 400 migrants to New York City and over 6,800 migrants to Washington, D.C. Texas authorities say that is a drop in the bucket compared to what Texas deals with every single day. Here's Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton talking about these two sanctuary cities.
That's the true irony here, is that they've actually advertised as a place where they want illegals to come. And then when they actually get a few hundred, or as in the case of D.C., a few thousand, then suddenly it's a huge problem.
Dana, here in New York City, officials say they are unaware when the next migrant bus may arrive here in the city.
But it's going to be soon. Governor Abbott clearly believes this is a net positive to him, and I think he's undeniably right. Are the people who are not who are criticizing this, that it takes, you know, the occasional droplet of migrants and embeds them deeper into the country, which is kind of what they want. That's a worthy point. But if that's the price you pay for this kind of optics, these kind of magnificent nationwide optics of liberal cities just absolutely going into conniption fits because a couple of busloads of migrants arrive, how do you think we're doing in Texas every day? How do you think we're doing? How do you think that we're handling just thousands upon thousands pouring across the Rio Grande? How do you think we're doing? So I think it's magnificent, magnificent the optics. There was one last thing I wanted to get to here, and that is that because it's big, I always want to do something every Monday for the beginning of the school year. On Channel 8, Morgan Young was talking about what the new sort of everybody paying attention to the new COVID rules.
For COVID-19, just as many North Texas students prepare to return to the classroom.
We should look forward to a very different school year. We should look forward to a school year where every child is...
This is Dr. Ashish Jha, who's the White House COVID-19 response coordinator.
In school, in person, full time for the whole year.
Well, that is the hope from the White House after more than 2 years of disruptions at school. The biggest change from the CDC that will affect students is removing the test to stay policy. Students who are in close contact with someone who tested positive for COVID-19 will not have to test negative themselves to stay in class.
Which is just another. Are you noticing the steps towards sanity that have taken us more than 2 years to arrive at? Better late than never, huh? And now, once school is underway in something approaching normalcy, we can begin to take stock of the self-inflicted damage that we have that we have visited upon our kids' education. There is going to be an achievement gap, a development gap, a moving, sliding divot dug out of our kids' educations because we forced them into online school. We forced them into remote learning. It's not the same. It was never going to be the same. And so much of it was perpetuated by gutless teachers' unions who did not have the spine to stand up for in-person learning. Well, hopefully this brand new school year that's underway in a whole lot of places can be filled with blessings, filled with learning, filled with safety, obviously. Just best wishes to every school, every kid, every parent, every teacher here in the new school year. It's 9:50.
The old man is weak, but strength comes from him. A smile full of youth and a gleam in his eye.
From the 1972 album Toulouse Street, which had Jesus Is Just All Right. Listen to the music, Rockin' Down the Highway. You also get Tommy Johnston and White Sun.
And I slip away down by the water.
So it was at this time Friday, I had a total brain belch. I said, hey, Fox News Sunday has a new anchor. I'll tell you who it is. And then had six things in my head. It is Shannon Bream, the wonderful legal analyst Shannon Bream. She'll be the new host of Fox News Sunday. There. That was bugging me all weekend. For producer Rhonda K. of Moreland, on Twitter at producer Rhonda K. R-O-N-D-A capital K. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills. Gordon Griffin for journalistic excellence. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Mike Gallagher next. I'm Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Be good, stay cool, see you in the morning.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.